It's the morning show on the Ideas Network here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Molly Stentz, in for Kate Archer Kent. What should happen to a loved one suffering a mental health crisis? When someone is potentially dangerous to themselves or others, should they be met by police officers who drive them in a squad car to a hospital hours away from home? That's what's happening across our state. Thousands of people in crisis are sent to the state-run Winnebago Mental Health Institute in Oshkosh each year. And that's something that the Wisconsin Attorney General wants to change. Have you had a friend or family member have to be hospitalized after a breakdown? What helped you the most? How should we be caring for those with debilitating mental illness? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Josh Call is the Attorney General of Wisconsin. He's been in office since January 2019. Attorney General, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Molly.
Good morning. Well, you've called for overhauling how the state handles mental health crises. Why do we need systemic change?
I think there are a lot of reasons we need to change this system. If we make serious change to this system, we can provide a better system for people who are experiencing a severe mental health crisis. We can also reduce significant strains on the system because of the way the system is currently set up, which means that law enforcement officers can spend more time working in the communities that they serve. And we can make sure that our tax dollars are used in a way that has a more effective impact and makes a bigger positive difference on our communities.
And so you've mentioned that this is a complicated issue in your remarks yesterday. Who has the power to make change?
Because this is such a complex issue, there are several different ways that we can go about making change. Some of the reforms that we have called for require legislation to be passed. One of the things that I would really like to see is a shift from the current model we have where in some cases, officers really have a decision between having no intervention and having this very restrictive intervention of emergency detention. I'd like to see a shift to a continuum of care so that there are more intermediate options like peer support and regional crisis stabilization facilities. I'd also like to see mental health experts or social workers as part of the response to emergency situations. That kind of change needs legislation to fund those types of efforts. But there are also changes that can be made with agreement by those who are part of this process. And so one of the things we recommend is that there be agreement to promote a standardized form for the medical clearance process that happens with these detentions. That would make things go faster and mean that people can get the care that they need sooner.
So there would be a statewide agreement on how long folks could be held for an emergency detention and when they would be safe to return home to their community.
Yeah, the way that medical clearance works is Winnebago Mental Health, which is the statewide provider that is available to anybody. So if there's not an emergency detention inpatient bed in somebody's community or near where they live, Winnebago Mental Health is often where people end up being transported. And that happens from across the state, which means there are hours spent in transport for the law enforcement officers transporting somebody as well as the person who's experiencing a mental health crisis. But before we even get there, what usually happens is that there's a medical clearance process where an emergency room doctor provides an initial review of somebody's health to make sure that there's not some acute health issue that would create a problem if the person goes to Winnebago Mental Health, which only provides mental health services. That process takes a while. It's not standard, and we are encouraging all those involved in the process to use a standard process to try to make that more consistent and more efficient.
Sure. Well, what about Mendota Mental Health here in Madison? Is that an option?
It's not really, and historically, Mendota had provided mental health services for adults, but that changed several years ago, and my understanding from conversations with the Department of Health Services is that because of changes that have been made in staffing and use of that facility, it's no longer an option for this type of process. But what's important also is that we really rethink the way that we're handling cases where somebody's experiencing a severe mental health crisis. This kind of restrictive emergency detention situation, is appropriate in some cases where somebody is an acute danger to others. But in a lot of cases, getting somebody much less restrictive intervention, again, with peer support or with crisis stabilization facilities, can address the acute mental health crisis that somebody is facing and lead to better outcomes in the long run for them, as well as reduced time and cost for those who work as part of this emergency detention process.
So it sounds like you're calling for more proactive measures so that people don't get to the crisis point.
That's a big part of this. There are two things that our coalition is calling for fundamentally. One is to create a continuum of care models so that we can divert more cases away from emergency detention, make sure that more people are getting treatment in or close to their communities and in less restrictive environments. In addition to the kinds of crisis stabilization facilities and peer support we're calling for, also having regional crisis assessment services and having enhanced community-based treatment when people are at risk for suicide, we think can divert more cases. But secondly, we also think we can improve the process when people do go into emergency detention through things like additional crisis intervention, team training, additional mental health bed space closer to communities where people live, expanded use of telemedicine, and potentially streamlining court proceedings. So there are a lot of changes that can be made here that I think can make a real positive impact on this entire emergency detention process.
So you mentioned this could require a change in state law, maybe additional funding. How much are we talking about?
I think funding is the key aspect of this, and that's going to be a question ultimately that the legislature and the governor will weigh in on. The governor announced earlier this week that he is including proposals in his budget that would fund some of these concepts, and so that was very encouraging to see. Now, after the governor formally introduces his budget, it will go to the legislature, and ultimately, it's going to depend on how many regional crisis centers that folks decide would be appropriate, how many peer support programs, and the more of those programs we have, the more that costs in one sense. But on the other hand, the more money that we're going to save by not having, first of all, the kind of healthcare costs that go with the emergency detention environment, but also savings when it comes to transporting people and officer time. So, there's a lot of savings to be had here, too, and how those balance out is a complicated analysis. But this is an investment that I think is critical because this system is in serious need of reform. And also, more broadly, this relates to behavioral health issues, substance use disorder, and people experiencing mental health crises. We're already in need of improvements in those areas, and the pandemic is going to exacerbate this. So this is a really worthwhile investment for the state.
Attorney General Josh Call, we have a call for you. We have Lisa from Madison who has a question for you. Hi, Lisa. Good morning.
Hi. I am wondering, I have a brother who has severe mental illness. We've gone through this for 25 years where he sat in jail for a year in solitary confinement for months due to episodes. And I'm concerned about the public being educated, about this dire need for vulnerable people who cannot help themselves. And people are going, we're going to have tax increases to fund this. I don't understand how any of this can be funded without people being willing to recognize it's going to take all of us as a community to resolve this problem.
Thank you, Lisa. Attorney General.
There are a lot of reasons it's really critical we address this, and I appreciate Lisa's comments. There are family members, friends, neighbors, people in our communities who experience severe mental health crises, and they should have access to the kind of treatment that is most effective for them. Mental health care is health care, and we need to, we wouldn't accept, as somebody pointed out at the press conference we held yesterday, we wouldn't accept somebody having to be transported in the back of a squad car hours to get treatment for most physical health conditions, and we shouldn't accept it when it comes to mental health treatment either. This is also a matter that relates to public safety in our communities, because if somebody is a danger to themselves or others, that can create a public safety risk. So addressing these problems effectively rather than waiting till a crisis has occurred is an investment in our public safety, and it means that our officers can spend more time, again, focusing on the important work that they're doing in our communities rather than transporting people for hours.
We're speaking with Josh Call, Attorney General of Wisconsin. I'm Molly Stenz, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Good morning. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stenz. We're talking about mental health and how we should care for our loved ones when they're having an emergency and could harm themselves or others. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call has been trying to find a better way since he took office in 2019 and convened a summit of law enforcement, mental health professionals to try to find solutions. How should police respond to mental health crises? What do you think? You can join us. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Now, Attorney General, you mentioned regional crisis centers, so bringing people closer to home to seek treatment at facilities that would be perhaps easier on them, better for them and their families. Do we have enough of these centers?
We don't, and that's one of the things we've called for here is an increase in these types of facilities. DHS describes these as low-cost, short-term, subacute programs for individuals who are in need of support and observation, and that can allow us to avoid the more restrictive environment we're talking about. One of the challenges, as I mentioned before, is that we have one statewide facility at Winnebago Mental Health, and if you're in northwestern Wisconsin or southwestern Wisconsin or just southern Wisconsin generally, officers may be traveling hours to transport somebody to Winnebago Mental Health in some of these cases. By having regional crisis stabilization facilities, we would have an alternative that, again, is part of this continuum of care. We could have more of them and have them closer to the communities that people are in when they're experiencing a mental health crisis. And we can afford more of them because they're cheaper than inpatient psychiatric care.
Let's go to the phones. We have John from Burlington joining us this morning with the Wisconsin Attorney General. Good morning, John. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Good morning. I wanted to ask what the Attorney General plans to do about law enforcement approaching mental health crises as law enforcement and criminal issues, and then people who are in mental health crisis being pushed through the criminal prosecution process. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, John. So should police be the people to respond? You mentioned there could be funding for more crisis intervention teams, so social workers.
Yeah, I think there are a few things that we can be doing on this issue. What usually happens is a call will come into a law enforcement agency about a person experiencing a severe mental health crisis, and law enforcement officers then respond to where that call came from and have to make an assessment about whether the person is a danger to themselves or others. And if they are, there's a process under Wisconsin law that allows a person to be taken into custody for a specific period of time, and then court proceedings may follow from that. One of the things we've talked about here is providing funding for teams that are not just law enforcement response when those kinds of calls come in, but instead are blended teams where there is not only a law enforcement officer, but somebody who is experienced in responding to mental health crises as a based on work in psychiatry or psychology or social work. Models like that, where there's either a non-law enforcement component or even an entirely non-law enforcement response, have been successful in other places, including Eugene, Oregon, and Denver. And so one of the things that we've called for here is additional funding to support those kind of mental health mobile crisis teams. A second thing that we've called for, as you mentioned, is additional funding for crisis intervention team training so that the officers who are responding when they do have training specifically in responding to individuals who are experiencing a severe mental health crisis. And in particular, that training promotes de-escalation techniques. And then more broadly, one of the things that I think we need to do for the system, our criminal justice system, because a lot of people who end up in that system are experiencing mental illness, is increase funding for diversion programs for people who are experiencing mental health issues. If the reason somebody ends up in the criminal process is because of a mental illness, the way to address that is not to incarcerate that person. It's to get them the kind of support and treatment that can help address the mental illness. And diverting those cases ultimately is going to help the people who are suffering from the mental illness and make our communities safer.
So you mentioned the governor has earmarked $25 million in the upcoming state budget. Do you see bipartisan support for your initiatives?
I think there will be bipartisan support. It certainly remains to be seen what happens with the legislature. But in conversations that I've had with legislators about this issue, I know that this is an issue that is important to both Republican and Democratic legislators. There are some Republican legislators like Senator Kathy Bernier and Representative Spiros who've introduced legislation that's designed to address emergency detention and to improve the process. So I'm really hopeful that we'll see bipartisan action on this. This impacts communities across the state of Wisconsin. And one of the things that we did here in this announcement yesterday is brought together an extremely broad coalition of folks who are part of this emergency detention process, from law enforcement groups to NAMI Wisconsin, which advocates for Wisconsinites with mental illnesses, to the County's Association, to hospitals and groups that represent physicians. Our hope is that broad coalition will persuade members of the legislature, both parties, that this is an area where it's critical that an investment be made and we can make a real positive change on the lives of many Wisconsinites.
I also saw in your departmental budget request to the governor that you'd like to include a new position for support for law enforcement, more training on implicit bias, racial intelligence education. What do you see this position doing?
Yeah, our budget request to the governor's office focused on a couple things. One is strengthening public safety and, in particular, supporting efforts to fight the drug epidemic and with a real focus on the problems that fentanyl is causing, which is a really potent, dangerous drug that's been linked to many overdose deaths. And secondly, to make investments that can help make our system fairer and more equitable. We've requested two training positions. One of them, as you mentioned, would promote racial justice and procedural justice. And I'll tell you, I got a call. I spoke with a sheriff when the protests were happening in the wake of George Floyd's death. And one of the things he said to me was, what kind of training should we be doing? How can we respond to the protests that we're seeing? And it's a good question. And one of the things I think we can do is have somebody who focuses on identifying what are the best trainings, what are the best practices that law enforcement agencies should be following, what things should they be measuring, and who works with agencies around the state to develop those kinds of programs so that we can take steps to make sure that our policing practices are as equitable as they can be. We've also requested a position for training on officer wellness and peer support. Officers face challenging circumstances and sometimes encounter very traumatic circumstances. having those kinds of programs.
Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call, I'm afraid we're up against the clock, and that's all the time we have this morning. But thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Molly.
Josh Call is the Attorney General of Wisconsin. We've been talking about his proposals to change how police respond to mental health crises. I'm Molly Stentz, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. U.S. Senate impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump resumes this morning as Trump's attorneys begin arguing their case. You can hear live NPR coverage starting at 11 on the NPR News and Music Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, also online at WPR.org. And do stay tuned. We'll brief you on what to expect today when we get the latest on the impeachment trial after 8. But now it's time for Wisconsin Life. This month marks the program's 10th anniversary on Wisconsin Public Radio. As part of the celebration, here's Wisconsin Life's co-founder, Ann Strainchamps, reflecting on one of her favorite stories.
From the beginning, Wisconsin Life was an experiment in rethinking what we call news. Because beyond the breaking stories and big events shaping our time, life as we actually live it unfolds on a smaller, slower, more intimate scale. What if, we wondered, alongside the headlines, we also brought you news of the everyday? What would it be like to document changing seasons, conversations with neighbors, local lore? Here's one example. An early spring day in 2012. Two young women meet to gather wild watercress in the Driftless region. The creek is swollen with snowmelt. You can hear water gurgling, songbirds overhead, the sound of scissors snipping fresh greens, a timeless ritual, and a moment in time. Meet chef and forager Danny Lind and producer Erica Janik.
There's a spring. Oh, there's a spring right there coming out of the side of the hill. See?
Yeah.
And all that watercress over there. That would be the good patch to get. There's some watercress.
Oh, yeah.
It grows all year round. It's a perennial. And in really protected spots, you can harvest it all winter if it's a spring that stays open. Summertime is generally not the best time. It doesn't like the heat. It'll get kind of yellow, and it'll bolt, have little flowers on it, and it'll get super spicy and kind of bitter.
So you just snip off the tops?
Yep, snip off the tops. You never want to pull it out unless you're trying to thin out the patch a lot, but if you're someplace where you're wildcrafting it, it's definitely the considerate and responsible thing to do to leave the roots in the ground so they can just grow right back. Watercress isn't native to the U.S., but it's so naturalized that it just about might as well be. When people would come west, they would bring a little bit with them and plant it, and it pretty much just took over after that. A lot of the creeks around here are pretty darn clean. Streams that are good trout streams are good indicators of a pretty clean creek. There's a trout.
Oh, wow.
Oh, there's a whole bunch of them.
They move so fast.
They're little babies.
I've never seen a fish move so fast.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing to do with watercress?
You know, this time of year, I really just having a little pile of it on the side of my plate, just about no matter what I'm eating. But it's really good in salads. It's really great in sandwiches. It's really awesome. Put in an omelet, just like right when you're almost done cooking the omelet, just set in there and fold it over, and it just barely wilts. That's really good. You can make watercress soup just with onions and potatoes and a little bit of milk or cream. I mean, it's one of the most concentrated sources of nutrition you can find. That's probably more watercress than we can eat today, huh?
It is quite a bit.
I'm going on a strictly watercress diet. You'd be so healthy. We could start the new trend, the new detox watercress diet. Move over grapefruit diet. Move over maple syrup lemon juice cleanse. I'd much rather eat watercress. Watercress sandwiches for lunch.
Wisconsin Life Stories. They're evergreen. That was Erica Janik and Danny Lind on a timeless spring morning in 2012. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. You can find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Ann Strainchamps. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Molly Stentz. Stories. We're hardwired as humans to tell stories. It's how we relate to one another. The writer Dorothy Allison once said, two or three things I know for sure, and one of them is that to go on living, I have to tell stories. Stories are the one sure way I know to touch the heart and change the world. Each week on our airwaves, if you're lucky, you catch these four-minute vignettes told by people around the state. Sometimes they're funny. When we hear a mom desperate to find a few moments of peace hiding in the bathroom, I mean, who among us cannot relate? Sometimes you learn things like why we love brandy in our old fashions and how people are keeping old ice harvesting traditions alive. But always, they root us here. They ground us in a sense of place and reflect upon what makes living in Wisconsin so special. We have with us the brain trust behind this storytelling project on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's called Wisconsin Life, and it turns 10 years old this month. We'd love to hear your favorite stories of life in Wisconsin. Was there one that you heard that stays with you, you just can't shake? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. We have with us Erica Janik, co-creator and former executive director of Wisconsin Life. She's currently the executive producer of podcasts at New Hampshire Public Radio. Good morning, Erica. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
I'm so glad you're here with us. We also have Maureen McCollum, the current host and producer for Wisconsin Life. Welcome, Maureen.
Hey, Molly.
Good morning. Well, kudos to you both for 10 years on the air. So we just heard one of the earliest episodes of Wisconsin Life produced back in 2012. Erica, can you tell us how that story came about of hunting for watercress?
Yeah, it was wild for me to just listen to that. I had literally just learned how to use the recorder about 4 days before that story happened. And, you know, we had been looking to do a seasonal story. It was spring and, you know, foraging for fresh things that had just come up was on our mind. And I had reached out to Danny Lind. I knew her through the CSA that I belonged to at the time. And she very kindly agreed to take me out for several hours. We just tromped around her area near Soldiers Grove, and we found all kinds of things, not just watercress. But I remember I almost dropped the recorder in the stream. I literally barely knew what I was doing at the time. But it was a really lovely day. And, you know, just listening to it, I was brought back to that day. And just the connection I felt both with the idea of harvesting and looking for all of these delicious things that are just growing all around us, but also the connection that I made with Danny just in those hours that we spent together. It's really special. And yeah, it was fun to listen to that because I felt like I was right back there.
It gives you such a sense of place. It reminds me of doing the same thing on a friend's farm, hunting for watercress.
Absolutely, so
I wonder, what was the idea, the ambition for starting the project 10 years ago?
We were really thinking about how we could sound more like Wisconsin. Wisconsin beyond the headlines, Wisconsin beyond experts from the UW and government officials. Like, what does Wisconsin mean to the people who live there? What does Wisconsin mean to the people who are from there? That became a thing too over my time in charge of the project, was how many people who didn't live in Wisconsin anymore but still felt this extreme connection to the state. And so really we just wanted to tell those stories. We wanted people to be able to, you know, through whatever story or whatever it was that meant something to them, to say, you know, this is my Wisconsin. This is what living here means to me, good or bad, really. And, you know, it's just an honor to get to hear these stories, get to be brought into people's lives. It was a really special time for me to work on that project.
And Maureen, you've been the host and producer of Wisconsin Life for about 3 years, coming to us from La Crosse, where you regularly contributed features. What drew you in?
Well, when I first got into radio, one of my driving, I guess, forces was just helping people understand one another through radio stories. And when I was a reporter in La Crosse, you know, I was reporting on everything Southwest Wisconsin. So like energy policy, politics, local happenings in the area. And, you know, I love reporting on the news, but when I got to do Wisconsin Life stories, it was a way to really like step back and look at, as Erica said, life going on around us, just sort of these everyday and really fun things that were happening. And so it was great because when I started as a reporter, it was kind of around the same time that Wisconsin Life started. So the first story I pitched to Erica was just about kayaking in the Mississippi River. And so it was my first time in a kayak. I thought I was going to tip over a few times. You know, I waterproofed like a microphone and I just went out and talked with people who love kayaking. And it just turned out to be a really beautiful story. I also, in the time I was in La Crosse, you know, covered the Westby ski jump and the Oktoberfest parade in La Crosse. So all these really important cultural moments that we're able to, you know, bring to the listeners of Wisconsin, because if you live in Green Bay, maybe you've never heard of the Westby ski jump. So Wisconsin Life really provides this great window into what's going on in Wisconsin.
Well, I want to play a clip from another episode from 2016. This features Gary Brockman of Middleton and his love affair with buttons.
I've collected a lot of things across my life, but I can't think of another type of object that pulls together the loose threads of sociology and art history and material science and technology in such a complete way as buttons do.
Erica, I heard that that was actually one of your favorite episodes. Is this true?
That is absolutely true. I love Gary. I loved that story. I mean, I loved so many of the people that I talked to. I feel like part of the reason this one stuck with me so much and that I loved it so much is I thought it would be interesting. I'm the type of person who, you know, I love learning about something through the eyes of someone who loves it. And I often am, I'm also the type of person who 5 minutes into listening to a passionate person talk about their thing, I'm like, I want to do that too. But Gary, he came in and he brought, I don't even remember. I mean, he had like a cart just filled with buttons. And just listening to him talk about how you can see kind of the political and social history of humans through this object that I didn't really think all that much about was so fascinating to me. And I remember he showed us these buttons from the French Revolution that were political statements as well as, you know, utilitarian objects to keep your clothes together. I just learned so much from him. I think I talked to him for 2.5 hours for a 4-minute story. And I just thought it was fascinating and I've never forgotten it. I learned so much from him. And I think that that's representative of so many of these stories, is that I learned so much from the people that I got to spend time with. People were so generous with sharing themselves and sharing their passions. I learned far more from all of the people that I talked to than certainly I taught them. I just loved working with him and hearing about why buttons are so important.
We're speaking with Erica Janik and Maureen McCollum of Wisconsin Life. I'm Molly Stentz. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. We're telling stories this hour. There's no campfire. There's no ghosts. But maybe you still have your pajamas on. I won't judge. We have with us Maureen McCollum and Erica Janik of Wisconsin Life. It's a storytelling project here on Wisconsin Public Radio that's a decade in the making. What story stands out to you about life in Wisconsin? Is it a particular food that reminds you of home? Maybe a favorite place or a song? Maybe you've got an idea for a story that needs to be told. Jump in here. We're at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Well, Maureen, I want to hear a clip from a more recent episode of Wisconsin Life about a 9-year-old named Kyrick and their lemonade business.
I wanted a bunny, and I can't have one. And I really wanted to do something good for, like, the homeless pets. And I just thought it would be nice to give them food.
I tell people all the time, it makes me feel so warm and fuzzy in the inside because she get it.
Maureen, you produced that episode, and that's a theme I've noticed you often incorporate children into your stories. What did you like about that story in particular?
Yes, one, there should be more youth on the radio overall, because kids are, like, adorable, and they're often more wise than us adults in many ways. But I produced that piece in particular because I had just, you know, I mean, it was 2020. Last year was awful, to say the least. And at one point, I was just online, and I had come across this 9-year-old girl who had a business called Kyrick's Lemonade. I looked into it and realized that she was making lemonade, selling it, and giving most of the profits, like, back to her community. So I went and interviewed her and her mom, Nikki, who you hear in that clip too. And just spending time with them brought me so much joy. And it was just such a happy afternoon, you know, in the midst of the pandemic when things were just really bleak and you didn't know what was going to be happening from one day to the next. And Kyrick just had such a positive attitude, and it just gave me a lot of hope and joy for the future. So it was just really nice being able to share her, like, passion and dedication to her community with the listeners.
And I feel like, as journalists, that's something we hear so often, that often the news is unrelenting, and often it's really hard to deal with. There's a lot going on in the world, and people want stories of hope, of their neighbors working for solutions, of looking for even just little rays of light of things in their world, in their own backyard, that brings hope to their friends and neighbors.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, of course, it's incredibly important that we keep listeners up to date on the latest happenings with the pandemic and what's going on with the vaccine. Like, that is our job to do that. But we also need to remind people that the world is still turning and most of us are still living our everyday lives in these kind of normal ways. And, you know, and if people are trying to make a difference by selling lemonade, all the power to them. We should be talking about that too.
Well, Erica, I understand that sometimes people were almost reluctant to let you document their lives. How do you get people to tell you their stories?
Yeah, often I would reach out to people and they would say, but I'm not interesting. I don't have anything to say. Mm-hmm. Or I can't tell you how many times I would arrive at someone's house or their place of work, depending on the story. And they would say, I mean, if this is terrible, like, you don't have to use it. It's no big deal. You know, and something I would tell people is, well, one, everyone has a story to tell. Everyone is interesting. And it's my job. I mean, really, I just saw my role as facilitating that and bringing out
the wonderful things about each of these people. I wasn't there to, you know, catch them in some embarrassing moment. I was there to celebrate them. I was there to help them explain to the world why the thing they were interested in is awesome, or to help them. In some cases, I would have writers come in, people that had never read anything they wrote publicly, and they were reading it for the first time out loud in front of a microphone, just being really encouraging and giving people space and time. I never had anyone say no when I asked them. Certainly had people, you know, that I, again, had to keep talking up and saying, like, you are interesting. Like, I wouldn't have reached out to you otherwise. I promise you, you have something great to say and something great to share. And in all cases, that's true.
We're speaking with Erica Janik, co-creator and former executive director of Wisconsin Life. Maureen McCollum is currently the host and producer of Wisconsin Life. Maureen, I wonder how producing Wisconsin Life has changed how you think about Wisconsin.
I think it kind of goes off of what Erica just said, is that every single person in this state has something interesting to share, whether they have like a special talent or they just, you know, like the rest of us, get up every morning and go to work and come home and spend time with their family or spend time alone. Like, there is something interesting and worth sharing about that life. And there is beauty in everyone's story.
Yep.
You know, I have a story list right now that's about 150 ideas long. My problem is I don't have enough time to get to all these stories. And that's just the beginning of it.
And how
go ahead.
Yeah. How do you find people, or do people find you?
Well, I mean, when we're not in the pandemic, I'm just out and about talking with people. You know, I'll go to festivals or I'll go to meetings, and I go to a lot of live music. So I just meet people that way. I read a lot of things online. You know, I mean, it's just like, it's everywhere. There are so many stories. There's almost like too many stories.
Way too many stories.
How have you been able to continue through the pandemic where there aren't those events you mentioned?
Well, you know, I've been tapping into some of those ideas that I've had for a long time. And thank goodness for Zoom meetings, because we're able to record interviews over Zoom. Like, the quality is going to sound a little different, but I think it's more important to get the story out there than to have this pristine sounding interview. So we've been doing a lot of interviews, like via Zoom. You know, Erica created a lot of connections with writers across Wisconsin. I've been coaching them in how to record their essays from home, which is generally just taking like your smartphone and hiding in a closet surrounded by sweaters. So it's just, you know, it's just working with what we're getting, the situation we're in right now. Like, we're still making it work. We're still cranking out two stories a week. So,
well, Maureen McCollum, Erica Janik, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having us, Molly. This was so fun.
And thank you for all of your stories throughout all of the years. Erica Janik is the co-creator and former executive director of Wisconsin Life. She's currently the executive producer of podcasts at New Hampshire Public Radio. Maureen McCollum is the current host and producer for Wisconsin Life. Just ahead, we brief you on what you need to know about today's impeachment trial. I'm Molly Stentz. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.